go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Deep Space High, sci-fi TV review podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, listeners, we have a very interesting cold open for you today. We are actually watching live the SpaceX Crew 1 launch mission.
Yeah, I mean,
We pulled this one out of left field. We were like, well, let's watch it, and then, you know, we'll record afterwards. And I'm like, well, let's watch it live, at least as the cold open, and then we'll roll into the rest of the episode. So as of right now, we are sitting at less than T-minus 2 minutes until the actual launch.
Yep, this is going to be interesting. I hope you guys have your beers for this one. I know I do.
Yeah, I mean, as this is dropping, this was 3 days prior, if the launch isn't aborted for whatever reason.
Well,
but
I'm sure if they're listening to this podcast, they're probably watching this as well.
Yes, it's one of the momentous occasions because this is the first time that SpaceX is sending up a full NASA crew. Last time they did it, it was just two test pilots to kind of test out the systems, do some maneuvering, you know, manual maneuvering in space and kind of getting familiar with the ship. And then this one's the first, as I'm throwing up the air quotes, official launch.
So what's the big difference? What's the difference between having, you know, two to four?
So, well, this is, you know, they have three astronauts and one from the Japanese Space Agency on board today. So difference-wise, I think this mission is supposed to be 6 months long, whereas the test flight was 90 days, maybe 120 days, so 3 or 4 months.
So it's going to be a significantly longer, more heavy payload. You know, this is, I guess it makes sense that the first one was a pre-test run. And
it was a test run in the sense where the test pilots did some maneuvers in space before docking with the space station. There's not much difference between liftoff and here. We're actually T-minus 6 seconds to launch off, as you may hear my TV in the background. That would be a sight to see in the Florida sky.
Jeez.
Imagine seeing that in person in the middle of the, not middle of the night, but it is definitely darker than dark.
Yeah, it is. Oh my gosh.
I would love to see a wide shot to see how bright it is.
You can see how powerful that jet engine is, or that rocket engine is. Wow.
9 of them, or 8 of them, something like that.
That's incredible. And that's all you can see. You can't even see the ship. It's so dark. Oh, yeah. All you
just
can
see
the
flames
is the
behind it. Ugh, I could watch a million of these. Probably have.
I know, I could too. But fuck, I've never seen one of these at just at this camera angle.
At this time
of night with such a powerful engine.
I've seen a couple of SpaceX where they launch like satellites or whatever other payloads. Like they contract out to the government to launch some of their satellites. They have a Starlink kind of sister company, which is they send out a bunch of satellites, and it's good for like if you live in the middle of nowhere, it's good for Wi-Fi and stuff like that. So that's other things that Elon Musk and SpaceX is working on. And that's what this Dragon crew capsule and whatever rocket they're using. I can't think of the rocket right now. But it's done a lot of cargo missions. It's done a lot of sending satellites up and for both private and public sectors.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, I also heard this is kind of a little bit separate, but towards the mission, that this is going to be the most astronauts they've ever had on the International Space Station in one mission. And they're actually going to have too many people to the point to where one person's going to actually have to sleep on the rocket, that they have too many people on the International Space Station.
Yeah, I think there's three up there now, and then they're sending three astronauts and one Japanese from the Japanese Space Agency. So yeah, I think we're looking at seven, but I don't think they'll all be up there for the entire duration.
No, I don't know if it will be, but I know as of right now, that's what it's going to be. So I just thought that would be interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This Dragon capsule that they have on top of this rocket can actually hold seven people.
Really? So, I mean, it's not even at its full capacity.
They just said Miko, main engine cutoff. Wow, SpaceX is doing just awesome shit.
Don't jinx it, please. Knock on wood.
No, just in general.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they really are.
I mean, because they have this, and then they have their Starship that they're still in the prototype phases and they're testing, but that's supposed to be the ship that does a lot of missions to Mars and does a lot of personnel transports, like space tourism. Why don't we go ahead and get into this week's episode, though? I'll keep this, you know. It looks like so far another successful launch. They are in outer space. So we'll go ahead and get into our episode.
All right.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
All right, well, what do we got in store for today then, Steve?
Well, in today's anticipated episode, we are covering The Mandalorian Chapter 11, The Heiress.
The Heiress.
As soon as I saw the title, I knew who was popping up in this show. I saw Chapter 11, Heiress. I was like, oh, snap, they're bringing her in.
I didn't, and I honestly, it took me a second, even after watching the episode, and I'm currently rewatching it, you know, it took me a second to get it there. But you want to go ahead and get started then, since fill everybody else in?
Yes, this will be a spoiler warning for those of you who have not seen the episode. Highly recommend pausing and going and watching the episode, because this one was a doozy.
Yeah, but by the time that we release this episode, it should be the weekend. You have the whole weekend to watch it, and you haven't watched already? That's just on you guys. Come on.
Yeah, good point, but throwing it out there just in case. Mm-hmm. Never hurts.
That's fair.
So go ahead and we'll do our brief episode summary with this something new that we've been testing the waters in. So this episode, Din Djarin, the Mando, finally makes his way to Trask with Frog Lady. Gets into, makes it to port.
Barely.
Get some details on some, barely makes it to port. Get some details on where he can find some Mandalorians from a quarrel? Corn? I mean, the way it's spelled is Quarren, but it sounds like they're saying corn. Corn?
Corn?
From a corn guy. It's the squid-looking.
It's the same species guy as Admiral Akbar. Or no, that's a different species.
No.
It's
the fish-looking
guy. But I recognize
guy.
The species, though.
Yeah. It's a familiar species I can't think of right now where else they've been in. But no, the Admiral Akbar is a Mon Calamari, who's the guy, the fish guy with the two big eyes.
I don't know. That you're right, but I'm trying to remember where I know this species from.
Well, you think about it, I'll keep going through the summary.
You keep going, I'll think. It's gonna take that long to figure it out.
So Mando meets this guy in an inn. It's like, couple hours sail away is where you'll find the Mandalorians. And he's like, cool, no problem. And then it ends up being a trap because they feed Baby Yoda and
Admiral
Mando.
Akbar. It's a trap.
Yep, exactly. They feed him into I think it's a mamacorn. I'm not sure exactly sure what that giant thing was they were keeping in the bottom of their ship. But they feed it.
You don't really get to see it. You only see kind of the teeth, but you know it's
they describe
fucking
huge. It as The corn guy was like, have you ever seen? I think it's a mother corn feed. And he's like, Mando's like, I don't think I have. He's like, well, step right here and see the incredible mama corn. So yeah, but they lure him into a trap because their goal is to kill Mando, steal his armor, and turn around and sell it, because Beskar is highly valuable, as we've experienced in season one.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I mean, that was fucked up the way that they got rid of, the way that they kind of baited him in that trap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because he knocks Baby Yoda, his crib.
Well, they feed him, so it comes up, and before it comes up to eat the fish, throws Baby Yoda's container in, and then tries, and then he's got fucking jumps in after him. I'm like, damn. Yeah. I mean, that was smart. I'll give him that. That was a very creative way to do it.
Yeah.
It's all right. And, go ahead. You were having a summary.
Yes, I'm giving the summary, so shut the fuck up. No, just kidding. So when he's trapped under these gates that this Mama Quarren's in, three other Mandalorians swoop in to save the day. And from there, get an interesting interaction on that ship, but we're going to cover that in a little bit. From there, Mando ends up teaming up with these Mandalorians to take down an Imperial transport ship with a lot of weaponry, and come to find out that those Mandalorians who saved Din Djarin's ass has their own cause that they're using it for. But he ends up getting some valuable information on where to find a Jedi, and kind of sets up the rest of the season in the last couple minutes of this episode. And for those of you who were wondering, the Frog Lady was able to give birth. Well, I guess she was able to fertilize her eggs.
Well, yeah.
And have it hatch. So now she has an offspring.
She's got one so far. Now, I couldn't tell.
That was a funny scene.
Yeah, that was. Damn. Oh, you know what? Let's just start. Go ahead and start with it. Fuck it. Were they trying to, teach Baby Yoda not to eat it? That, fish is friend, not food kind of thing? Or, was Baby Yoda going after it and they're just trying to fight?
One of those, they were introducing the offspring to Baby Yoda, and then Baby Yoda, because he eats a lot of reptiles in this. So, I mean, it seems like, or amphibians, because he ate a frog the first time in season one when he meets Quill, the Ugnaught pig-looking guy. He's kind of chasing around a frog and then eats it. Then a similar thing happens in the Sanctuary when he's chasing a frog to eat it. So it seems like their preferred method of eating is amphibians.
I mean, that could just be, with their species.
So it might have been a thing where the frog lady and her husband. The way that they've
evolved, yeah.
Well, I was going to say it's they were probably introducing, and they thought, oh, Baby Yoda thinks this is cute. They're playing with it, but Baby Yoda really has an ulterior motive. It's like, I'm gonna eat this motherfucker. which I found out after the last episode. I didn't think of anything of it, but apparently a bunch of people really hated that.
I'm not entirely sure why, though. Like, do you understand the argument why?
Well, they're saying, he's eating the potential child of a sentient species, and it's effed up in a way. And I was like, okay, I see your point. This isn't real life, so it's just dark humor.
Yeah, I mean...
So, I mean, I got some people's points. I understand, yes, it is sentient. Some people were saying genocide. I was like, we have no confirmation that these are the last two of their species. But it's like... I get it, because, some people were comparing it to eating chicken eggs. That's what all we do is eat unfertilized chicken eggs.
Well, I mean, that is essentially what it was, but.
Yeah, but if the chicken was a sentient being, would we be eating chicken eggs? Probably not.
Oh, probably not, but this is also a baby, and it's just kind of going by its own instincts.
True. It's hungry. It wants to eat. It eats the eggs.
All right. When you're in a survival scenario, and it's kind of something that dawned on me with this in the beginning of this episode, when he said, "I know you're hungry. We'll feed you," and he kind of gave the sad eyes. How long were they really there for? To maybe he is hungry. Maybe he hasn't been fed in a long time. If they had to,
well, yeah, that's the thing. How much time?
They've had to limp across space in that hunk of junk ship. They can't leave that cock. Yeah, they can't leave that cockpit, so they got no food, no bathrooms, no nothing, and he's just got food right there in that frog lady's hand, and he's like, I want that food, and I can't have it. I mean, he's probably thinking we're all dicks.
Probably. You don't know. I mean, you don't know the time jump. I imagine it's half a day or something like that, where because they did sleep. And then, you know, the last thing he ate was an egg before they kind of begin moseying their way to Trosk. Yeah, yep. Trask.
I mean, you never know. So, but just saying, like, I don't get the I don't get the argument. I think it's just a little bit ridiculous. And I thought the way that they played it out in the storyline was really well. They played it out really well.
Yeah, and I thought so too. And it didn't bother me at all. And like I said, I get the gripes of the people of who it did bother. But at the end of the day, it's just a show. And if you're really going to let this episode or whatever happens on this show really dictate your feelings on the rest of the series, then so be it. But let's talk about other things that happened in this episode. The big one being the live action debut of Bo-Katan. Now, Chris, yeah. I know you're not super familiar with Clone Wars, but I know you know the actress because you do like the Battlestar Galactica reboot that started in the early to mid 2000s.
Yeah, Starbuck. She played Starbuck on Battlestar Galactica. Well, it's a great show. You should watch it. She played Starbuck really well. She was better than the original Starbuck from the 1970s show. That's for damn sure.
Yes.
But then again, the 1970s.
Katie Sackhoff, if I didn't say it earlier.
Yep. Great actress. I think she's been in a couple other shows too.
Yeah, she has done some other things. I've seen her pop up in Big Bang Theory in a couple episodes. I only know that because I've been catching it on TV every now and then.
Well, she
and
was
have
in a,
been watching it on HBO Max.
I think she had her own show, River. No, it wasn't Riverdale, like Riverside or something like that. She was like a cop show. She was like a deputy.
I know who she is. I know she was in Battlestar Galactica, and she was the voice of Bo-Katan in the Clone Wars and Rebels.
Oh, was she the voice?
Yep. Oh, yeah, she was the voice actress for her in that show, and then Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau were like, well, we're pretty sure she could play the live action part, so they casted her in it. Which yeah. smart move. I liked her in this episode.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought she played the part really well.
Very good actress. So, especially since apparently she was really young in Battlestar Galactica. I didn't know she was, because I guess she's only like 40 something years old.
Yeah,
and Battlestar came out in like 2004.
40. Like I said, I didn't see Battlestar, so I don't know.
I didn't know.
I mean, I know how old she is, but
one of these days we need to do a. One of these days we need to cover Battlestar. It's a really good series.
We'll see.
It's arguably
we're on Star Wars.
I know, but you can make the argument that Battlestar is the most successful sci-fi show of all time, even more than Star Trek. Sci-fi, you know, in the genre context, purist context.
Well,
because when the shows came out, they weren't sure. There's, but that's a whole other argument.
Yeah, that's a whole other debate, which we're not getting into. But to give some people who are unfamiliar, who may not have been Clone Wars or Rebels fans, to give them some context of who Bo-Katan is. So, she was introduced to us probably in the mid-seasons of Clone Wars when they really hit the Mandalore plot hard. And she was one of the key members of a group called Death Watch, which we'll have to tie this back a little later because there are some things to it. But she was a member of Death Watch, which kind of splintered from the Mandalorian government because the governor at the time was more of a pacifist and a peaceful governor, and she really wanted to bring in democracy and kind of get away from their warrioristic ways of the past. So she was a part of that group, and she was kind of an antagonist for most of her time in Clone Wars until Darth Maul took control of the Death Watch and ended up killing her sister. And from there, she kind of flipped to a protagonist. She left the Death Watch. She kind of helped Obi-Wan and the Jedi. And at the end of Clone Wars, she actually recruited Ahsoka to help so Bo-Katan and Ahsoka could get the Jedi and maybe get some clone troopers to go. It's essentially seize Mandalore because...
Well, was her sister the one that was the ruler who... Now, wasn't that the same actress who... Or not the actress, the same character who Obi-Wan had like a weird... Or I guess he was in love
Satine.
With her? Okay.
Yeah, Satine.
So that's where she's saying she has the rightful... So that's why she's saying she has the rightful claim to the throne of Mandalore, because she was the sister of the former queen of Mandalore.
Yeah, I was getting there. Well, not queen. I think
that's why. Yeah, maybe queen,
because there was a prime minister, and then her Satine was like the ruler. I don't remember what the official title was. I don't think it was queen though.
Oh, I don't know. Kinda I like just remember England she had a big hat. Well, she had a big hat, like you know queens do. I don't know what the hell, why they all have ceremonial, anyways. But they do. So that's why. Moving on.
Yeah. So once her sister died, what happened is Darth Maul was, you know, kind of took over the Death Watch, and then he was able to seize control of Mandalore. So essentially, Darth Maul was the ruler of Mandalore for a time, until she recruited Ahsoka, like I was mentioning, who then requested assistance from the Jedi Order, specifically Obi-Wan and Anakin. And then what happened was, I want to say command, it's Captain Rex, but you know, some of the Anakin's 501st Division went to Mandalore and actually fought to bring order back into Bo-Katan's hands.
Hmm.
Something like that. I don't remember. Been drinking a little bit.
Well, if it makes you feel better,
Well, the Siege of Mandalore was happening at the same time Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, was happening. So, you know, when Ahsoka captured Darth Maul and was kind of trying to restore power and get the Death Watch and Maul's rule out of Mandalore, that's kind of when we see Bo-Katan was taken over. And then when she appears in Rebels, I think Mandalore is still kind of broken due to the Empire's rule. And she is gifted the Darksaber from one of the characters in Rebels, which kind of makes her the de facto leader of the Mandalorian people.
And then that explains why she was asking about the sword towards the end of the episode, because she held the knife up to the guy's neck, the commander of the ship, before they went down, asking, does he have the blade? Which we know that he does, but Mando doesn't, because he was not there when he cut the blade out. And that's the first time and the only time he's really seen the blade so far. So...
yeah, given Mando's background, I don't think he has any idea what the Darksaber is. And we know, at least I know...
well, it's pretty clear the he has last no person idea what's going to have on. It,
obviously, but the... you know, if you watch Rebels, we know the last person who have the Darksaber before the Mandalorian started was Bo-Katan.
So she... so
during
the
Great Purge, something...
something happened to where she lost it.
Yeah, somehow, some way...
ooh, backstory to look forward to.
Some way, Giancarlo Esposito's character, Moff Gideon, was able to get his hands and steal the Darksaber from her. Because usually, the Darksaber is passed down from leader to leader in Clan Vizsla. And, you know, you could only acquire the saber in pretty much a duel to the death. So being dead... yeah, it's, I mean, there's some, I think there was, someone was able to fight somebody and get it without the other person actually dying, but it's pretty much a duel to the death.
Huh. I mean, it makes sense for Mandalorians, but I figured with, you know, the kind of, I guess it didn't really, when did the Darksaber originate from? What time period? Because the reason why I was confused
Old Republic-ish.
Was, oh, okay, so it's a lot older. That's what I was going to say, because I know that during the Clone Wars, the Mandalorians at the time were very peaceful. They were trying to avoid that. So that's why I was kind of confused on why they would still do that. But I guess kind of fell apart, they kind of reinstated it.
I think when the episode where the Darksaber is introduced in Clone Wars, I think, is it Pre Vizsla? It's one of the Vizslas who has it, and he is going through like the origin story of it, which is, you know, the first Mandalorian Jedi, this was his saber, it was stored in the Jedi temple before the Mandalorians went and got it back, and then it took place thousands of years, so it's been in his generation or his family for generations.
You know, I'm curious, do you know who the or what the name of the first was it Mandalorian Jedi or Mandalorian Sith? Or
I would have to watch that Clone Wars episode again. It's been a while, but the Jedi was Tar Vizsla.
Tar Vizsla.
And then the person who had it during Clone Wars, I think, was Pre Vizsla. And Tar Vizsla was a Mandalorian who was force sensitive and recruited to join the Jedi, trained in the Jedi, and eventually became a Jedi Knight.
And that's who originally owned the Darksaber.
Yeah, and then once he died, I think this was Legends, and it might be a part of canon. I don't remember how it was explained, but it was his saber was stored in the Jedi Temple. But we're getting into super nerdy shit right now. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, we can. I don't know. I'm curious
myself. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to talk about the episode.
Well, I mean, we've already kind of done the summary. I kind of don't mind talking into the nerdy shit because that's kind of where it gets interesting. You know, how well does it interconnect? How good was the storyline? How good was, you know, it's part of one of the things we look for in the show is how does it do with the rest of what we know about the Mandalorians? How well does it intertwine? Because this tells us a lot. You know, we find out that Mando, one, he has no idea about, apparently he is a part of did they use the word cult? Did they say like a form of cult of the... Do you
remember? Well,
because they considered it more of a religious, more of a ancient.
Well, let's listen to the clip real quick, see what exactly was said.
Where did you get that armor?
This armor has been in my family for 3 generations.
You do not cover your face. You are not Mandalorian.
Who's one of them?
Dink Ferrick.
One of what?
I am Bo-Katan of Clan Kryze. I was born on Mandalore and fought in the Purge. I am the last of my line. And you are a child of the Watch.
The Watch?
Children of the Watch are a cult of religious zealots that broke away from Mandalorian society. Their goal was to reestablish the ancient way.
There is only one way. The way of the Mandalore.
See, they did use cult. So they almost do describe it as a cult of zealots.
Cult of religious zealous? Zealots? Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Bent on the ancient way.
Yeah, and I think the Watch she is referring to is the Death Watch, because as I mentioned when we were getting the flashbacks in season one, I do remember hitting the pause button and seeing that the Mandalorians who rescued Din Djarin did have the Death Watch symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, now I know Bo-Katan was a part of the Death Watch, so it might be a group that splintered from the Death Watch and were who were even more hardcore and set in the traditional ancient ways of Mandalore.
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe that's what that was, or maybe, long story short, the group and the cauldron that Mandalorian belongs to was another
clan.
Kind of faction of this Death Watch that, you know, they're just super hardcore in these ways.
Well, I mean, it almost seems like they're becoming their own clan. Like they're splintering off from Death Watch. Because he has no idea or he really doesn't, you know much apparently about Death Watch. Didn't even understand what it was. Because given the fact that he started with this when he was very young and he was kind of raised to believe this, you know, I don't know how much she knows about what's left of the Watch, about, you know, I don't know how current her information is, that, you know, her information could be out of date. They could have splintered off. You know, there could be more to this story than, you know, just what she said so far. And I think we're going to find that out later in the season.
You know, this group had to be isolationist because they've obviously encountered, you know, Din Djarin's encountered no other Mandalorian who has taken off their helmets.
Right.
So with that being said, he hasn't had contact with other Mandalorians outside of his Watch group.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinks this is the only way, when now we're seeing, and it explains the kind of the plot hole we had in the first season where, okay, in Clone Wars, a lot of Mandalorians took off their helmets. So what's going on? And now we know, okay, he's a part of this group who doesn't believe in it. Once you take the creed, your helmet is on at all times, unless and it can't be taken off, and you can't show your face to other people.
Yeah, and then it also makes sense to why he didn't understand what the Jedi was when the Jedi were around not too long ago, and Mandalorians and the Jedi have a deep history that, you know, they're more set on the ancient ways. And from what I can tell from studying this stuff, Mandalore didn't, and the Jedi didn't really get too involved until Revan. So they spent a lot of time in their early history, not, you know, when establishing all of their, I guess, religion. Yeah. When establishing the religion, they didn't really spend too much time with the Jedi, so it makes sense why they don't have too much information on them in their ancient texts, that they're just studying the ancient ways or going back to that ancient philosophy. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Who knows? Who knows how many generations this group has been in existence? I mean, obviously Bo-Katan is familiar with them. Given she was a part of the Death Watch, it's probably a splinter faction. So, but how many generations has this group?
Well, she was there for everything.
Right, but what I'm saying is, so she's familiar with it. So when did the Death Watch and this little faction of this Death Watch split?
I would imagine it would be
2 or 3 generations.
Yeah, you never know. I would imagine since, you know, she was involved with, you know, in the Clone Wars, or she's got, you know, Bo-Katan's got storyline in the Clone Wars. I would imagine it was around the time he was a kid and was taken in. So probably not long after there. So probably that. Maybe 5-10 years she knew, and then probably 10 years, maybe 15 years, she went in the dark when the Empire took over, and she lost her, you know, lost touch with a lot of the Mandalorians. And so, I mean, that would be
Mandalorians,
my guess.
Are few and far between. And the thing, like I said, the Death Watch was a group kind of, they didn't exist long, I don't think, before in Clone Wars.
Right, but this seems like post-Empire, so you're thinking Clone Wars to post-Empire, that's a good 20 to 30 years. And I'm imagining, because remember, he was taken when he was a kid, I don't know how old he is. So, you know, you're kind of guessing on how old he was when it comes to that on the timeline. But looking at Bo-Katan, she doesn't look aged in the episode, so I imagine it would be, you know, within that 20 to 30 year span. Because how old was she supposedly on the show? Was she an adult on the show? Was she a kid or a teenager? Was she that? I don't remember. So I don't have all the,
we assume she's about Obi-Wan's age, which would at this time be
early 30s.
Maybe a little younger. So no, it would be, well, during Mandalorian, she's probably in her mid 40s. Cause I think Satine was her older sister.
Damn, what is she, like a Vulcan and just doesn't age, or
like, who knows? I mean, we don't know how old she is. It's, you know, somewhere in her 40s, maybe early 50s, don't know for sure.
Then I guess it does draw in a little bit of confusion then.
The thing is, we don't know. Well, I mean, they're obviously setting up this watch, so Mando is going to question some of the things and kind of figure out more about his group and how it's different from other Mandalorians, hopefully in the episodes or seasons to come.
Well, I mean, that was part of the reason why I really liked this episode, was because you got a lot of new information when it comes to the Mandalorians, and you got a lot of explanation on some of the plot holes that's been going on with the Mandalorian and the Mandalorian storyline. But you got, you know, when you answer one question, two more pop up. So now we got a lot more questions that we want answered for going forward. So I'm curious to see if they're going to be able to, and how they're going to do it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, and I think, you know, they'll explore it. We'll see, you know, because I felt like this episode was to test the waters. It was like a backdoor pilot, or maybe just, you know, their Disney or Lucasfilm's way of testing the waters to see if there would be enough fan buzz around Bo-Katan to potentially give her or her group their own spinoff series.
Well, I mean, I didn't know much about Bo-Katan coming into the episode, but they were pretty fucking badass. And even Mando looked like he was caught off guard on how well-coordinated and how precise they were. I mean, they were a well-oiled machine, and then they figured out how tough Mando is, you know, later. But I think Mando was even caught off guard on,
well,
these guys might be the real deal, you know?
You know, Bo-Katan is, or Katan, Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan is battle hardened. I mean, she fought in battles in Clone Wars, she fought in battles in Rebels, and in between with the Purge. So she is a battle hardened Mandalorian.
Yeah.
She has seen lots of actions, and she is extremely kick-ass.
But you could even see, like, and you got to give credit. I don't know if it'd be the directors or the choreographers, but you could see how well coordinated the three of them were and how off Mando seemed. Because you could tell he was the odd man out because,
well,
you know, he seemed like...
You're talking
like...
about a group. I mean, they explained in the episode that there's been a group of pirates kind of confiscating ships and gear and whatever, or stealing shit. And, you know, Bo-Katan has been with her group forever, so they're a well-oiled machine. And then you throw a new person into the mix who's, even though, you know, in his own rights, a freaking outstanding warrior, you know, he's not going to mesh quite as well because he's not in, he's not with people he's familiar with fighting yeah. with.
I mean, true, but I mean, it just based off, well, I was going to say his facial expression, but his helmet expression. It seemed like he was in pretty impressed on what they were able to do, and you could tell way he was behind a little bit and kind of watching what, you know, what they did and how they did it and wasn't prepared.
Yeah, good body language.
Yeah.
You know, but like I was saying, back to this potential spinoff with probably Bo-Katan and Katee Sackhoff leading the show. I mean, there was a lot of information given in it where she's gathering weapons and whatever they can to kind of to arm more Mandalorian troops and kind of to come after the Empire and to kind of take back Mandalore and reestablish order on Mandalore. So, I mean, I don't know if that's something, it could be plot of future seasons on the Mandalorian, or they can just turn it into a spinoff. They have her doing her own thing, trying to fight back for Mandalore, and then Din Djarin continues his bounty hunting work. So, if we're seeing, and they name drop Ahsoka Tano in this episode, so if assuming that he does meet Ahsoka in this season, and he hands off Baby Yoda, that kind of concludes that arc. So now, where does the show go from there? So either two things have to happen. Either, for whatever reason, doesn't hand off Baby Yoda to Ahsoka Tano, or he does, and then he continues. They have to find some new story arc. Maybe he joins Bo-Katan in the fight to take back Mandalore, or maybe something else.
Well, I don't know, because I think that they're going to find... The way that they name-dropped Ahsoka Tano, it seemed like that they were going to find her within the next episode or two. Like, they were going to find her pretty quickly, and I think they're going to move along the storyline to where it's not necessarily going to be, here you go, Ahsoka, here's Baby Yoda, we'll have a nice life. And he just, you know, zooms off in a ship and is gone. I think it's going to be, you know, they're going to have another mission to where, and I think it's going to be, I think they're going to come back to this storyline in the in this season. I wouldn't be surprised. It depends on the direction that they go with the Empire, how much more information we're going to get, because I think that that's going to be the real climax of the season, is when Bo-Katan meets with what's his name? The Colonel? Colonel who had the Darksaber, what's his name?
No, that was Moff Gideon.
Moff Gideon. Colonel's dead, right? Colonel Jackass is dead?
Who's Colonel Jackass?
The guy who originally hired
the Mando client. He had no ranking.
I thought, yeah, he did. He was with the Empire. A ranking.
He was with the Empire, but he was just referred to as the client. No ranking ever came out of it. No, he was in charge of something.
I thought they did. I thought he came out as a colonel or something. No. I like calling him Colonel Jackass, though.
No, you're full of it.
Yeah, well, calling me full of it, I lost my train of thought, so I have no idea where I was going with this anymore.
Way to go. Anyways.
Sorry, you got me off. Once you derail the train, it's gone.
a lot of good episodes, or a lot of good stuff came out of this episode. There are some great action sequences, you know, when they're fighting stormtroopers on the ship. I like the scene where they're jetpacking to intercept the ship or catch up with the ship. It felt like, it looked really badass.
Yeah.
And this whole episode...
I'm curious why they had to wait so long before they could, what did they call it? Elevate? Was it elevate? No.
Well, yeah, they had to wait until they left the harbor zone before they could ascend.
Ascend, that was it.
So I'm thinking the best way to think about it might be, you know, when you're on a lake, there are certain areas where it's like, you know, you can't, it's like wake zones or whatever, where you have to go below a certain speed so you're not creating a large wake that would disrupt others or, you know, other boats in dock or whatnot. So I imagine it's something like that.
Yeah, it could be. Or it could also be that I couldn't tell, but it almost looked like they were on an ocean planet and there wasn't solid surfacing for the docks. So maybe they weren't trying to do it so that they couldn't, you know, fuck with the docks.
Well, that's one of the things when they ascend and he ascends prematurely, you see the thrusters and all the blowback is kind of disrupting a lot of the water. And we assume, I mean, they kind of cut away quickly, but we assume it's messing with some of the ships or whatever else is around that port.
Yeah, because I think that's why he fucked up the landing. Because if you notice, when he tried to land, it was like almost perfect, and he had it lined, and he had to wait until it lined up perfectly, the ship underneath the pad before they reversed thrusters. Because I think it was because there wasn't enough solid surface to, you know, push against to stop him for or to slow him down. If that it wouldn't be enough resistance, the water would be too.
What? You're making no sense. You're making no sense. Gather your thoughts, because what happened in that scene?
And we're because they reversed the thrusters right when he got over the docking port. If it was underneath the water, kind of like how when the ship fell over and tipped in the water, the thruster shifted over the water. So it didn't have the correct.
No, you got to go rewatch it. That's not what happened.
Well, I mean, that's why it failed.
No.
Because the engine failed. So that's why it lost thruster capacity and flipped over. And it flipped. Then what happened? Did it just
go back? Go back and watch it.
It exploded. Mando was saying, the engine Mando, blew out, didn't it?
Yes. But Mando kept saying, I don't know if we have enough fuel for the reverse thrusters. So he was able to get slowed down, ran out of fuel, and one of the thrusters cut out, ended up causing, because the other thruster was going, it ended up tilting him into the water and dumping him into the water. You got to listen to the dialogue in the first couple minutes.
They barely talk in the first couple minutes. There is no dialogue.
Well, they're in reentry, and we'll just say the tower is like, you have to slow down, Razorcrest, slow down. Amanda's like, we're trying.
Okay, and then he was telling the frog lady if we have enough
fuel for the reverse thrusters.
Okay, but if you also paid attention, when she kept saying, you got to pull up, you're coming in too fast, he waited until the light flashed green, which he was completely underneath the docking port. Because you have to have resistance, you know, because when you flip the thrusters, if you do it over a solid surface, you're going to have better resistance to slow you down compared to water, where it's not as strong of a surface. So because the water would move around, you wouldn't have as much resistance. It would be different enough to where it would slip between the two engines, blow out the engine, and you would fall in. That's what I thought happened. Because otherwise, why would he wait to the last possible second for that thrusters and then tries to ease her down?
I don't think it was intentional. I think he was trying to slow down. He was trying to get the thrusters.
Oh, no. I mean, I never said it was intentional. I just figured the dock just moved because of the thrusters. So because the dock moved, because it's a dock, that it just...
Go back and rewatch it.
I did rewatch it.
Watch it again. No, but let's move on. Let's give our thoughts, overall thoughts on this. What did you think of the episode? How did you like it compared to what we've seen so far in season 2?
I actually liked it. I think this was the best one so far. It had great action scenes, phenomenal action scenes. Oh my god, the choreography was great. Acting was phenomenal. I'm still curious. Still a lot of questions on the Mandalorians, but we got a lot of information. But like I said earlier, when you answer one question, two more pop up. But I thought acting, I thought choreography was phenomenal. I thought Baby Yoda was adorable. I liked how they continued with the egg kind of thing, and it had a good resolution. And I thought this was a great episode, but I don't know. I really don't know what else they could do to step up their game, though. And that's kind of what's concerning me. You know, maybe they have plateaued to where this is as good as it's kind of going to get, and maybe I shouldn't expect much better, but I don't know. That's just kind of me.
We'll see. If there's one thing I can say is I trust Filoni and Favreau. But I did like the episode. Arguably one of the best shows, or one of the best episodes so far in this show. And I think my only gripe is they're still too short. Runtime-wise, this was maybe 30 minutes. If you tack on the credits and the preview, it's like 34 minutes. So I would like to see longer episodes like we did with the first one of season two, where it was closer to 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah, I kind
of... But even then, I mean, we still got a lot of information. We found out more about Mandalorian and his background. We were introduced with a pretty popular character from Clone Wars and Rebels. They established their, you know, with Bo-Katan, you know, a fight coming either with the Empire or whatever to take back Mandalore. So that could come either in this show or maybe a spinoff show. So there was a lot of good things that happened, not only action wise, but moving the story forward. And that's what I wanted to see. Last episode didn't feel like that. This one did. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. So, and kudos to the director, Bryce Dallas Howard, who directed episode 4, the one with the shrimp farm in season 1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she directed that episode. It was the same person who directed this episode.
Oh, yeah. She did a phenomenal
And this job. Episode, I think, was so much better. She is getting her wings as a director, and she is looking... I'll trust her to direct any Star Wars thing. Her and Deborah Chow. Whatever they want, Lucasfilm needs to give it to them. So I look forward to the coming episodes, because I don't think we'll see Ahsoka in the next one. We might see her in 5 or 6, or maybe they'll save it till the finale, but we'll find out.
Well, then, so...
No, actually, I take that back. Hold on. I take that back. I think they'll close the Ahsoka arc early, and then the last 2 episodes, maybe 3, we'll probably touch on Boba Fett. Okay. That's what I'm going with.
I don't know if they're going to close... When you say close the arc early, do you mean like close it for the season early, or close it and then come back to it later?
No, he'll meet Ahsoka.
You're anticipating probably a huge storyline arc for this, for Ahsoka.
No, I think when I say resolve arc, they'll either hand Baby Yoda off early, and then they'll have some other maybe arc to finish the season as an arc as a,
so you're,
as a story.
You're thinking that he hands over Baby Yoda, goes, does something else, and kind of starts a separate story, or does another story while Baby Yoda's with Ahsoka? Kind of?
Maybe, yeah, and maybe Ahsoka is just trying to figure out what to do with Baby Yoda. The Mandalorian has to go off and maybe deal with Bo-Katan and other Mandalorian issues. Maybe he has to deal with Boba Fett because he wants his armor back. Maybe he has to deal with whatever.
I don't know. I'm curious to see. I don't know if it's going to be that easy. That's one potential storyline. I don't know. I think the storyline it's going to go with is, I think Ahsoka is going to last a little bit longer, and I think we're going to go more of this Bo-Katan versus Empire route. I think that you're starting to see that the Empire is not giving up, and I think we're going to start seeing the founding of the First Order, or the evolution into the First Order. And I think that's going to be the storyline that we're going to go through. And I think that the Boba Fett's going to start coming in the last like 2 episodes. I don't know how they're going to do Boba Fett yet, but I think Boba Fett's going to carry over as a like cliffhanger to season 3. And Boba Fett's going to be the main thing for season 3. But I think that's going to be our storyline.
That's kind of what I was saying. We have different middles, but ultimately
I just think that they're going to be a little bit more... I think Ahsoka's going to be more prominent. I just don't foresee them handing over Baby Yoda so soon and just kind of taking
Baby
Yoda.
Well, they probably won't. Maybe he'll just be absent for a couple episodes while he's dealing with something else and he's in, you know, reliably safe hands.
Yeah, but I mean, it's safe to say that Baby Yoda's a huge reason why a lot of your audience is where it is now.
True. So we'll see how they play it. I mean, it can go a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, could.
But we'll find out in future episodes.
Yep, because we have no preview for you guys for next week.
No.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
Chili.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it! Punch
it, hot night! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So, next time we are going to discuss Chapter 12, whatever the hell it's called, directed by whoever the hell it is. And that's what we'll be covering next time on Deep Space High.
Well, I guess that will do it then. Well, thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion of The Mandalorian.
Don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High Also, check out our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast to stay up to date with our latest announcements and whatever else I post on there.
Yeah, and be sure to let us know what you think by leaving a review on Apple Podcast. If you like the show, please leave us a good review. If not, you could always DM us on Twitter. Don't need to put that on Apple Podcast. Just saying. But anyways, I'm Scar Marshall Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. This is the way.